Indigenous Agricultural Revolution. I heard a story recently about a badger ploughing up and down a lawn, wending its way round trees and obstacles, and finally disappearing off the scene. It turned out that this badger was the latest piece of electronic wizardry, a lawnmower programmed to work its way across the landscaped lawns untouched by human hand, eye or brain. What would William Cobbett have to say about that? I'm sure he would say with me, "What's wrong with a sheep?" Not very neat, perhaps, but a great deal more economical in the sense of the real economy. Somebody is spending all day making, designing, marketing and so on and so on this type of gadget, locked in factories across the world, selling the fuel, sorting the bureaucratic administration, taxes, wages and so on, so that people can pay money to walk across the lawns to animal enclosures where children let out of school can stroke a bunny rabbit or feed an orphaned lamb for a few moments under strict supervision. Would it not be more sense to cut down the electronics, to use them far more sparingly, so that we can bring childhood to life once more through contact with the land? The ability to supplement the wage salary system with produce from the land still survives. Some years ago, economists from a number of universities gathered in Prague for a conference. They were from various countries: Greece, Eastern Europe, Italy, Netherlands, Scandinavia, UK, US, Germany and France. During one of the sessions, the Eastern European professors of economics burst out into complaint. "We have not been paid for months," they said. "Our salaries have not come through, so we haven't any money, none at all. We have had to rely on our gardens for food." Quite a few of us fell to thinking, if we received no salary for months on end, we wouldn't have a snowball in hell's chance of feeding ourselves and our families from our gardens, as they called them. In many places during the 20th century and into the present day, it has become common for town dwellers to retain close links with relatives in the countryside. At the same time, some system of allotments of garden houses near the city has enabled waged labourers to supplement their incomes from the factory or office system. The skills necessary for the successful growing of food have continued to be handed down from generation to generation in a manner which William Cobbett would certainly have approved of. Where the household teaches the child the necessary skills for the successful growing of food, those skills remain for life. During the 1980s, Paul Richards set out to bring the indigenous farmers of Sierra Leone up to speed with modern agricultural methods. He sent a group of students out to make a scientific assessment of the management of local farms, with a view to suggesting technical improvements. To the astonishment of all concerned, the students collected detailed evidence of a profound knowledge and experience of the ecological processes at work on their indigenous farms. These traditional farmers were so knowledgeable that they were able to give the students advice on problems they were encountering on the college farm. The students recorded their findings in textbook scientific terms. Subsequently, the research was published in 1985 under the title Indigenous Agricultural Revolution. Richards showed that traditional farmers tend to ride with natural diversity rather than seeking to override local differences. By making the best use of natural conditions and taking best advantage of local diversity, farmers save time and conserve resources, producing an elegant sufficiency. There was no blank uniformity, no monoculture, with its necessity for the use of the products of big farm, the use of pesticides, herbicides, and artificial fertilizers. All that was avoided. Instead, complex patterns of intercropping were practiced, providing security of food in different seasons and weather conditions, with excellent weed and pest control, using a minimum of labour. In the three villages studied, the students noted 100 different methods of intercropping, using seeds saved for specific purposes. In this way, the small farmers provided a stable and reliable supply of food for themselves and their families, and for the market. Their skills and their knowledge of farming methods was built up by past generations and constantly subject to change as circumstances changed. Supplies were supplemented by wild foods and medicinal herbs from the forest, to which all had access and about which all were knowledgeable. The experience of those students can be repeated across the world. There is an urgent need for the development of a people's science of agriculture based upon decentralized, hands-on research on traditional farming systems. During the Russian Revolution, the call for just such support for sustainable farming practices by Alexander Chernyshev and others was ruthlessly suppressed by the communist authorities. Latterly, home production of food, medicines and other basic necessities has been actively discouraged by the powers that be, because such self-provisioning spells independence from the money system. All the more reason for the little people, the hobbits, to quietly but firmly take their children out of the jaws of Mordor and to recreate the Shire, a host of shires, in fact, all suited to particular localities and to the people who live there now.